Good afternoon, everybody. It's 3 o'clock Tuesday afternoon, May 11th. And we're going to look over some of these enolate reactions and enolate mechanisms. So I have a bunch of things that I did this morning that I put together to look at. Some of these are problems out of the book. Some of these are my own problems. And let's take a look at the first one. So these are problems to work on. Some of these are going to be, you gotta do a screen share first. Some of these are going to be mechanism problems. Others are going to be find the product. However, in all of them, the mechanism is going to be critically important. And so there's a lot of repetition in today's section that we're going to be looking at. Although there's a lot of repetition, it doesn't look like repetition. And that's the thing that I want to try to get around to you, is that things that look very different can be very similar. And so learning how to find the similarities and differences and to essentially go through the reaction mechanisms is important. Okay, so this one is one that we want to do hydrolysis reaction, acetone, PTSA, and heat. Remember that the other abbreviation for PTSA is TSOH. So there's two abbreviations that are used for that acid, and that is the acid that is structurally similar to sulfuric acid. It's just organic soluble. And it can be used in preference of sulfuric acid. So it's essentially, I don't want to say it's equal to, but it is similar to sulfuric acid in the way that it works. And so the first thing to do is to try to look at this molecule and see what it is that we need to do with this molecule. Where do we need to go with this thing? What is the reaction that is being undertaken? What are the functional groups that are here? So these are all the questions that we need to ask. What functional groups are present? What reaction are we being asked to perform? What is the mechanism? Of the reaction, all these things that we need to figure out before we can really start. So when we look at the molecule, we got to figure out what the main functional groups are in the molecule. So just looking at that, one of the things that you notice is that there are two oxygens which are connected to the same carbon. And that same carbon is the important carbon in this functional group that we're looking at. And if we look at what else is connected to that carbon, if we trace out that carbon out the other two directions, we find that it's carbons in each direction. And so this is a full ketone that we're looking at. And this piece up here, we're adding water. These reactions, when you add water, are called hydrolysis. Now, I usually take and put water over the arrow when I want to do a hydrolysis reaction, but there's nothing that precludes me from just putting water underneath the arrow and making it look sort of like a sulfolysis reaction. But the important thing is to find that you've got water in there, that you've got acid and heat. And these are all the factors that contribute to a hydrolysis reaction. So then we have to know, so we've got a ketal, we've got hydrolysis, and then the reaction mechanism, this is the one that we sort of need to know what happens with the reaction. And now this isn't a mechanism, this is sort of a reaction pattern that normally what happens with these types of reactions is that we split the two bonds. Those are the oxygens connected to the same carbon. And so we're not worried about the other end of that bond where the oxygen is connected to the R group. We're worried about the end where the two oxygens are joined at the same carbon. So it's that carbon that determines which bonds are being broken. And as we break those two bonds, we add water across it and we create the carbonyl. Plus we create two equivalents of HOR. And so it's, you know, it's, if we're looking at two equivalents, there's our two equivalents. And essentially what we have done is we have added in the oxygen and the two hydrogens, which together are the H2O that has been added into the molecule. So that's where water is being added across. We'll look specifically at the mechanism because we're going to need it in order to figure out this one a little bit. We could just simply go through and say, oh, okay, following that pattern, I need to break this and I need to break this. And I should put a carbonyl in that place. And so if I just draw that much, I should be able to draw the carbonyl and keep the stereocenter. And then the piece that came off that's the alcohol. The other piece that is sitting here is the other alcohol. And so what I've done is I've taken and added in the oxygen and the two hydrogens. But let's go through that reaction mechanism and see how that happens, because it's a little unclear looking at this, I think, how things came about here. And today is all about the mechanism of this hydrolysis and seeing a lot of these hydrolysis reaction mechanisms. So let's take this apart and look at the reaction mechanism. Okay, the first step that we need to do is we need to protonate something. And the question is, which oxygen do we protonate in order to start off the mechanism? Does anybody have any ideas, suggestions, direction? Give you a hint. Doesn't matter. You can protonate either one. They both need to leave. And because they both need to leave, it really doesn't matter which one you protonate. So step number one, protonate an oxygen. it really doesn't matter which one. So we just pronate one. Once the oxygen is protonated, it creates a good leaving group. And the next step is assisted leaving. So in this step, what happens is the lone pairs from the oxygen push in, pushing out the leaving group. And what has left is that component of ethanol.
I think it may have frozen.
Oh, I can't see it. I'm watching you guys more than I'm watching the thing. It did freeze. Ooh, and then it updated. Can you see it? All right, so all I needed to do was just hit it and it updated. We'll see if it stays good. Okay, the next step here, number three, is nucleophilic attack by water. So because we're adding water back into this reaction, because there's lots of water there, the water is our predominant nucleophile that outcompetes the leaving methanol. It comes in and attacks the carbonyl location, shifts the electrons back to the oxygen. Now we get a sequence of protonation and deprotonation. We need to deprotonate this incoming oxonium ion, and then we need to reprotonate the other oxygen in order to make it a good leaving group. Now, what some people will do, some people will just do this, just transfer it all in one step. I kind of think that's cheating. The reason that I don't like to do that is because oftentimes these are solvent assisted. That solvent plays a really large role in migrating those hydroxyl groups from one location to the next. And that it's really not frequent that the orientation is just right, allowing for that proton to transfer from one position to the next. And oftentimes we see that these guys, the hemiacetal or hemiketal in this case, the hemiketal is observed in solution, meaning that the proton does go to the solvent and doesn't immediately go to the next oxygen. So we don't generally just transfer one cation for another cation. We generally go through a more stable neutral intermediate before protonating the next oxygen. So we go through and we protonate that oxygen. I think I can shorten things up here just a little bit, just to make room so it'll stay all in the same spot. That creates a good leaving group there. So this was 5 protonation. And then at this point, we have loss of leaving group. We have the assisted leaving step. So electrons are going to push in and kick out the leaving group. This structure is a little bit complicated. And so I know I was, one of the comments I had this morning was that I was drawing a bit fast. I've tried to like slow it down a little bit compared to what I was doing this morning. I may still be going a little bit fast. I just broke that bond. And I need to turn things in order to make them look more appropriate. And then the final step, step number 7, is the final deprotonation. So here, that conjugate base takes the proton back, giving the electrons back to the carbonyl group. And we have an equivalent of ethanol that we've created. And those are our two products. And oftentimes what people will do is at this point, they'll take this thing and they'll draw it in a more or less linear orientation. And what we'll need to do is go through and just number, make sure we haven't made any mistakes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and the oxygen is on 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oxygen is on 6, and that is the right linear molecule that we would create. Just to give a little bit more help to this, when I bring in that attacking water, we can highlight that water molecule is incoming and make it a little easier to track where that water is going. And how that water is integrated into that molecule. That's the whole reaction mechanism. And so it's good to think about when we had that general reaction here, that sometimes it can be such that this arm of the molecule through that R group can be connected. And if it does happen to be connected, then these two are still co-joined and could be connected together. Another possibility is that sometimes these R groups are connected, in which case they can be connected there. And so we can get ring systems or bicyclic ring systems. And when the molecule opens up and becomes linear, some of these are still connected to the molecule. And so understanding that mechanism and understanding how things connect sometimes it's as easy as taking and looking at the general mechanism where they split in two, getting rid of this bond for a second, and saying, oh, if this arm were connected to that R, then this arm would still be connected to that R once the oxygen-carbon bond breaks. Makes it a little bit easier to see. Or the other way around, if these two R groups were connected, then they would still be connected over here once it hydrolyzes. And so we allow for those sorts of ideas in our model and how that thing breaks apart. Okay, did that go too fast? How did we do? Just checking in. Zooming out, leaving that part there. Not too bad. Okay, let me see. One of these I did in lecture, so I'm not going to do that part that I did in lecture. Let's skip over that. And I've got a sequence of three problems here to show you that build in skill set. 2-butanone reacts with ethanol in PTSA, toluene. Toluene is a very common solvent for these. So why is toluene so common? Toluene is common because toluene has a boiling point, which is 110 degrees C, but it azeotropes with water. And I believe it's something like 95.5% ratio forms an azeotrope, which is a constant boiling fraction. And this boils, I believe, at like 95 degrees Celsius. As a constant boiling, it might be a little bit higher, it might be closer to 98, but it's somewhere below 100 degrees that it azeotropes with water. And then the water, when it reaches higher than 5% in the Dean Stark trap, separates out. And so it's both for the low boiling point, relatively low boiling point, as compared to some other materials, and the ability to be able to azeotrope out water, and the ability that they are so different in their polarities that they separate once they settle, that toluene is just a very, very generally used material for this. Used to be that they would do benzene. Benzene also makes the same azeotrope. Boiling point on benzene is right around 100 degrees. And benzene also forms the same azeotrope. The problem with benzene is that benzene is a known carcinogen. And so most people at this point try to avoid working with benzene, and just throwing that methyl group on there makes it less carcinogenic. Toluene is a suspected carcinogen, but not to the same level that benzene as a known carcinogen. So they use toluene instead of benzene. But the question is, what is the reaction? What is the product that I'm expecting out here when I react this with ethanol? All of this is designed to remove water. And so when I take a ketone and I'm removing water with ethanol, that means that I'm going to the, brain froze ketal, that's what I wanted. So that means that I'm making the ketal. So in that case, what I do is I take this guy, you break that bond, and then we connect two separate oxygens to it, here from the ethanol, I'm going to connected in that position. So we keep all the same carbons. And at this carbon here, we create two new bonds. And each of those new bonds goes to an ethanol molecule. And that's our ketone. And water is a byproduct. So 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. We're still connected at number 2. And we connect each one of the ethanols there at number 2. All right, what happens if we take, you guys caught up? Just checking. All right, what happens if we take and react a ketone, this time with a diol and PTSA and toluene? Now, sometimes we write the Dean-Stark trap in, sometimes we don't. Sometimes we leave the Dean-Stark trap off because it's a piece of glassware, it's an apparatus. We don't always include it in the reaction. It's nice when you see it because you know what it is. That Dean-Stark trap is to remove water. So we know that we're removing water. We've got an alcohol plus a carbonyl, we're removing water. We do the same equation. But now there's two possible products that I could consider. So one possible product that I consider is breaking this and using two equivalents of this molecule. So I could consider making this guy and I can consider making the two new bonds where the oxygens form a ring system. So if I count this out and I look at figuring out this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Or if I count it this way, this is probably a better way. Counting it 1 for the carbonyl, 2 for the oxygen, 3, 4, 5, and 6. You can see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. 1, 3, 5, and 6. So there I've accounted for each of the possibilities. So the question is, which one of these is major? They're both ketones. Both loss of water. But which one of these do I want to consider being my major product?
The cyclic one?
Yeah, why, BB?
Well, you said the other one takes two equivalents. So if you had one equivalent, you would get the cyclic. But if you had two equivalents, you'd still get the cyclic.
Ah, why? If I had two equivalents, would I still get the cyclic? You're correct. You're not wrong. You're absolutely correct. Okay, so when we go through the reaction mechanism, there is a point in the reaction mechanism where I go through this species. And the question is, what is more common, or what is faster, reaction-wise? Is it faster to have these two molecules reacting? This would be the intermolecular. And this would be the intramolecular.
Intramolecular?
The intramolecular is always faster. Exactly. This is faster because it doesn't rely on a collision. Essentially, what happens here is this reaction, the rate is equal to a K times the concentration of the substrate, while this one down here, the rate is equal to K times the concentration of the substrate times the concentration of the alcohol. And what I do oftentimes is I say, all right, look, the K value here is much, much larger because the intramolecular reaction means that as this thing is spinning around in solution, this tail is whipping around and it's constantly banging into other sides of this molecule. And the number of collisions that happen per a fraction of a second are astronomically high. Bond vibrations are on the order of femtoseconds. And so this guy is banging into this a huge number of times. And the chances of having a productive collision where this oxygen bangs into the carbon, given the fact that we're forming a six-membered ring system, is extraordinarily high. So this rate and the K value are extraordinarily high. On the flip side, these two molecules, if they are to react with an alcohol with a second portion of the alcohol, have to actually find each other and collide with the right orientation. The K value for this is a much, much smaller K value that goes into this reaction. And the rate and the substrate times the alcohol concentrations, because you're multiplying these two concentrations together, give you a value which is small as compared to the K value times the concentration of just the substrate itself. So the reaction rate of the intramolecular is always faster for all reactions than the rate between two molecules, than the intermolecular rate. So that's what we see there. And so the one that is major is this guy here. This one's major. And forms a lot faster. So we always go for the intramolecular over the intermolecular. Okay, last one. Let's take, not last one, last one in the sequence. I've got more after this. Let's take this aldehyde and react it with methanol, PTSA, Dean Stark toluene, okay, where is this gonna go? What are we expecting here? So this looks like the exact same reaction. It's an acetal formation, and we should be considering that we should be able to make the two bonds, each of these to a methanol, and we should be able to make that product, except I don't want to mess that up, that's a hydrogen that's there. How do we feel about that product? Does that look like the right thing?
I mean, wouldn't the alcohol at the end have to be protected for that?
For that to happen? That's a good question. Okay, so this is actually a minor product. And BB's question to whether or not that alcohol on the end would have to be protected, if I wanted to make this specifically, yes, I would need to protect that alcohol. Because what's going to happen is, as this reaction is ongoing, I'm going to go through this intermediate where a methanol is bound in this position and this oxygen is going to turn and attack that position. And if we track the numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, that's going to make a 5-membered ring system. The H is there, the OCH3. This still has the proton attached to it and is currently a positive charge. And the next step is just a simple deprotonation. And this is actually major. So again, watching for that intramolecular. That this reaction is just really fast. It happens really easy. So to that point, when we're looking at these things and we're looking at possible ring closings like this, what we see is that internal five and six membered rings form fast. And their major products were possible. This is because of the bond angles in these guys. Bond angles are approximately 109.5 and fit that tetrahedral sort of bond angle. The 3 and 4-membered rings these are less likely due to ring strain. So we don't see those very often. And 7 and 8 and up become less likely because they're too floppy and the bond angles are just not as favorable. So we tend not to see 4 and 3 or 7 and 8. It's those 5 and 6. These are the really key ones, 5 and 6. So always be on the lookout for those 5 and 6 membered ring systems. When they can form, they typically do form. Okay, the next set of problems that I have are mechanistic problems that are really, really good mechanistic problems. These are problems that I stole out of the book. And I hadn't really looked at the problems in the book. And then I looked at these and I thought, oh, those are really, I like these a lot, which is not surprising because I like Klein's approach. And unlike other books, most other textbooks, when an author writes a textbook, the textbook publisher goes out to other authors, other people that they have in a Rolodex that like to write problems for textbooks. And the problem sets are written by people other than the author of the book. Usually it's thought of as being beneath the author of the book to actually write the homework problems for the book itself. Their sole purpose and their sole job is focused on actual writing of the book itself. And so it's rare to see the author actually take an active role in writing almost all of the problem sets within the book. Klein is different. That is what Klein does. Klein really looks at the problem sets and aligns his problem sets and originally went to the literature and pulled a lot of these problem sets from the primary literature. It was one of my main focuses in choosing the book was because of Klein's ability, and Klein's problem sets were just that well structured. They were really, really good. And so this one is out of the book, and it asks you to write a plausible mechanism again. I'll put in parentheses PTSA, and this would have used a Dean Stark trap as well. They didn't include it in the mechanism or in the writing of the problem, but there it is. And what they want you to do is they want you to give a reasonable mechanism. For the reaction. So whenever I hit a problem like this, two things come to mind. Number one, consider the chapter. We're in the acetyl-ketyl chapter. And because of that, what we're going to do is we're going to look for mechanisms that are along the line of the acetyl-ketyl chapter. We're looking for an acetyl-ketyl mechanism. All right, so in looking for that acetyl-ketyl mechanism, then what we need to do is we also need to consider the type of reaction that it is, and that this is acid catalyzed. And my other rule here is that when something is acid catalyzed, look for a place to protonate. If it were to be base catalyzed, think enolate reactions that we were doing in lecture, right? So the enolate reactions that we were looking at were all base catalyzed. Then look for a place to deprotonate. So that's what we're trying to do here. In this one, we want to start off with a place to protonate. And so we take that first molecule. And we look at all the possible sites of protonation. So now the question would be, well, what do I look at to protonate here? What's possible in terms of protonation? And basically consider your options. Figure out how many options there are and then consider them all. So the molecule is not too complex. Where can I protonate?
At the oxygen, and then you could do the double bond potentially.
That's right. So we can do the oxygen. Oxygen is going to give me this guy. And then I could do the double bond. So the double bond is interesting because when the double bond takes the proton, it looks like an electrophilic addition reaction. And as we've done electrophilic addition reactions before, we know that we should consider different sides of the double bond. I should consider that side. And I should consider the other side. Okay, so those are the three possibilities that I've got. And the question then becomes, well, which one of those possibilities is the right one? What do I pursue? What do I follow here? Is there anything or any clue in looking at these, maybe I need to assess a little bit more. Stability-wise, is there any of these that are more stable than the others? The tertiary. I assume that if I labeled them A, B, and C, that the tertiary that you're referring to is C. Adriana? Yes, actually, wait. Pokey says C would be better.
A would be the best one.
A would be the best one. Why would A be the best one? Oh, now I'm curious.
Because carbon wants full octets over oxygen, even though oxygen's more electronegative.
Okay, I like that. Let me give Pokey a chance to explain why C would be better. I'm going to assume Pokey's writing. B is secondary carbocation, which is worst of the options. Okay, so Pokey was going for C because C is more substituted. And BB is going for A because A has a completed octet.
Also C, the positive charge would be next to, I guess it could donate by resonance, but it could also withdraw through induction.
I like that. Okay, so we hadn't considered that. That's a good thing to consider. I like the idea that that oxygen is an electron withdrawing group by induction. That is true. It is also a resonance donator when it is in a position in which it can directly donate, as it can here. So I guess the question is, does drawing the resonance change anything? Does opinions change at all? What's a stronger force, induction or resonance? Resonance. By orders of magnitude, resonance is a stronger force than induction. And so we have always said that when we can take and we can push the positive charge around and we can delocalize the positive charge, that that's a more stable cation. There's something else about this, though, that is pleasing. This piece with the positive charge. The thing that's pleasing about that is that if we go back up here, it looks like this. It looks like the it looks like the ketol and this one. It looks like this. And I think I've got it up here that it looks like this structure as well. Or even more aptly, this structure here. That this is a structure that we've seen where we have an R group attached to a carbonyl, allowing for nucleophilic attack, that this is a structure that is mechanistically similar to other ketal acetal mechanisms that we've already looked at. And so seeing that, number one, it's more stable. So that implies lower activation energy. But more importantly, familiar to ketal and acetal formation. And because it's got that component, I haven't seen anything that looks like this today or recently in terms of my acetals or ketal formation. And I haven't seen anything that's a full-fledged carbocation either. All I've ever seen are these sort of resonance stabilized carbocations where the positive charge really resides on the oxygen more than it resides on the carbon. And so it's looking like my first step is probably going to go route C. And that this is probably the route that I'm going to go. So let's take that and run with it. Let's examine again what we're expected to do. We're going to take this guy and try to convert it into here. So we're adding in this diol, 1,2 ethane diol. And we're going to do it through a reaction mechanism that we're going to propose now that we've sorted things out. We're going to do it by protonating the double bond. And by protonating the double bond, what we will do is use it like an enol. Now, remember that enols tend to work through their carbon nucleophiles. And so really what's happening is the lone pair electrons that are on this are putting pressure on that double bond and causing that double bond to be more nucleophilic. And as it adds to that double bond, we create that familiar. So I'll just draw the proton there just to track real quick, but we're not going to, we're not going to track that proton beyond this because the next step is nucleophilic attack, where the diol attacks and adds to that position. And now we're off and running in our reaction mechanism. And now all we need to do is follow the reaction mechanism to go through and to make the cyclic ketone. But see how that critical step, it was hard to find that critical step. Once we found that critical step, then everything becomes easier. Now you guys could probably tell me the steps of what needs to happen next. So what do I need to do next in this next step here? Can you guys tell me?
Deprotonate.
Yeah. Take the base, pull the proton, give the electrons back to the oxygen. Next step from there. Use smaller arrows, be easier. So now I've got to get rid of this group. So before I can get rid of it, I've got to turn it into a good leaving group. How do I do that?
Protonate it.
Protonate it. Turn it into a good leaving group. Now that it's a good leaving group, now I got to give it the boot. And it doesn't just leave. This is the assisted leaving part. So the steps are push the electrons in, excuse me, and kick out the leaving group. That group is now left as methanol. And now I've just got two more steps. The next step is nucleophilic attack. So I bring in the electrons and attack the carbon. These mechanisms are longer, but you guys are totally ready for this. And the fact that they're all so similar, you just need to see it enough times to sort of embed it in your brain. Drawing it a bunch of times from a bunch of different molecules really considerably helps. And the last part is just pull the proton. And we're done. So to me, the hardest part in seeing this mechanism is this first step, understanding where it's going to protonate. If you understand where it's going to protonate, the whole rest of the mechanism is just drawn from exactly what we've been doing. So how do you find where it's going to protonate? That goes to this key step here. The key step here was to assess all the protonation positions and look for something familiar. Look for both stability and look for something familiar. And when you find it, then take that forward and investigate it. It's hard to see how we can move forward with this oxygen protonated as in the A molecule here. Because while I have a leaving group, I don't have a stable carbocation. And attacking this and forming this carbocation would seem strange. If I attack the carbocation over here, I'm going to end up with a proton on that carbon. And with a proton on that carbon, in addition to the oxygen, there's no clear way to have it cyclize and have both oxygens attached to the same carbon. So I kind of get stuck. This one leads me to something familiar, which I can start the acetal-ketal formation mechanism from. And so, like I said, explore your options, find the right option. Look for that familiar thing. Think about the chapter that you're in. Think about the mechanism that you're looking for. It's going to connect to the mechanism that you're looking for. You just need to find how it connects to it. It's not going to be something new and totally off the hook. It's going to be something that is just going to be one step that's going to lead you into something familiar, and you've got to find that one step. find that one step and you are on your way in golden. Because everything after this was textbook. It was just that one step that was hard. Let me give you another one. Let's see how we do. Give the mechanism. All right. Where are we going to start? Oops, something's wrong. I drew it wrong. I apologize. That's going to be hard. I got caught up in there we go. That's better. Put the oxygen in the wrong spot. Should we go back and sort of review the steps? Protonation, excellent. This is an acidic mechanism. It's acid catalyzed. And so I've got to protonate. Where am I going to protonate? Double bond with a question? Suzanne? I love it. Yeah, we can consider the three different options to protonate this one. So if we're considering those three options, well, what is it doing? Stop it. Okay. The three options to consider might be protonation of the oxygen, or protonation of the double bond, such that I'm getting one of two possibilities. So there's all my possibilities, A, B, and C. So protonating the double bond could be protonating to B or protonating to C. C, are you seeing that C has the same resonance? And that C again gives us that same structure. Outstanding. That's what you're looking for. Is you're looking for that same structure again. Okay, once we've got that structure, then this mechanism should pretty much write itself. So now what we do is we work from that structure and that protonation to then attack with water and to hydrolyze this and see what happens, and let's see where it goes. So what we're going to do is indeed I would take as a first step, and I would protonate that double bond. And the proton went there, and we'll track it there, but that's as far as I think we'll track it. Because after this, the next step is really the attack of water. And the opening back up of this guy. And now we're really sort of on our way. That once water attacks here, I think you guys can start to find your way at this point. Especially if you have the other mechanisms that you're looking at. We've protonated it, or it is protonated. We will remove the proton. After removing the proton, we will shuttle it using a solvent-assisted mechanism to create a leaving group. That makes it into a good leaving group. And then the assisted leaving. And then the last step is just simply the deprotonation. And we're done. So it's helping seeing these multiple times, or at least seeing them from different perspectives, but seeing how that mechanism plays through multiple times can be really helpful. All right. I had two more. And I think this is a good one to look at. I don't know if we want to look at both. We could look at one of them, look inside how much more energy we've got. So this one starts off, it's another draw the mechanism, but it has some different skill sets that are important to it. I lost, there's supposed to be an oxygen sitting in that corner. And what they want is this has water and acid, and it interconverts into this guy. Oops, I already messed up. Hang on, slow down. That's the best way to draw that. Okay, so these guys are interconverting, and they want us to propose a mechanism. Okay, so if we're going to propose a mechanism on this, the first question that I would ask is, number one, are all the carbons the same? Anything gained or lost? Second thing.
Expand.
What's that?
Oh, I was just answering.
Yeah. So what was the answer?
Oh, the ring expanded, but it's all the same number of carbons.
Yeah, it's all the same number of carbons, but the ring expanded. Okay. Number two, what mechanism, what chapter are we in? So what mechanism and what chapter are we sort of dealing with, should we be looking for this type of problem? And as we're looking at this type of problem, oops, try something novel. Getting tired. I'm gonna try sitting down for a little bit, see how this works. As we're looking at this problem, we know that we're in the ketal and acetal chapter. And so we should be considering ketals and acetals. And so looking at sort of this acetal ketal chapter component, we need to develop a plan, some sort of a plan of attack. And I think that that plan ought to involve, number one, map the problem. So here's my mapping. What I would say is that this oxygen and this five-membered ring system that I'm looking at is still this oxygen and five-membered ring system. And in fact, it probably extends down to that carbon. And that if I look at what's left of this system, I have this oxygen, which is probably here with the one carbon, and I have this oxygen, which is probably there, and that the acetal carbon is that guy. And that what is more than likely happening is a sigma bond rotation. That once I've mapped it out and I look at kind of where everything is going, and it may help me to draw in this proton and to understand the stereochemistry of what's happening around that proton, that this tetrahedral center is simply spinning on that sigma bond. And so what I need to do is I need to break this bond. I need to open this up. So that's going to have to break. And in order to do that, I'm going to go through that whole mechanism. It is the acetal ketal problem. So now that I've mapped it, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to protonate the blue oxygen . I'm going to break bond, rotate, make new bond with green oxygen. So that's sort of my plan and sort of mapping it. Does it help to see the colors and how things are connected and where this is happening? Is that giving you sort of a better read on this problem? Cool. Okay. So I'm trying to give you different skill sets for looking at different types of problems. So some problems, it's all about looking at the options given the mechanism at hand. Other problems, they're more complicated and they need a bit of mapping to resolve before you can start to dive into them. So let's take this. Let's go ahead and execute that plan and see what happens. So what we're going to do is we're going to take and protonate this oxygen as the start of our mechanism. To draw these, I typically draw a diagonal bond and then two that are perpendicular to each other. But the front one stops short of the back one. So they're about the same length. It's just that this is diagonal, so this one's going to end in the front. Then I'll throw that oxygen up above and draw the bonds to it. I do two parallel lines that extend down and then finish out, I forgot to hit my oxygen in there, and this is now protonated, so that's going to become my leaving group. That gets a positive charge. This bond is going to push in, and maybe it's better if I really try to like bring it down to here because it's kicking this guy out. So this is the assisted leaving step. And that five-membered ring system remains as a five-membered ring system. It never breaks. But what I get is I get the double bond to the front carbon. The back bond remains. This group has now left. The bond is broken. And I have the hydrogen and the oxygen that are extending sort of down. And now I'm going to rotate around on that sigma bond, bringing this guy around to be able to make the new ring. And that's going to rotate the hydrogen into the up position and the oxygen into the down position. Then it's an attack and opening up that ring system. Well, opening up the breaking the double bond. I like this one because it also gives you some practice thinking a little more three-dimensionally. Just blew that bond, however. Get rid of that one too for a minute. So they have to connect down. I have to make a seven-membered ring here. Should be, or six. No, I am seven. Let's count it from here. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. So that is a seven-membered. This guy still has a positive charge. And the last step is I deprotonate that. And that is it. See if I can zoom out. How did we do? How did that feel? Any questions on that? Okay, I got one more for you. Today is a little bit of trying to find repetitious problems for good practice. So here, what I want is this molecule reacting with water and H2SO4. To form that guy. What do you think? Any ideas? Number one, are all the carbons still the same?
There's the same number.
Yes. Carbon. So all the carbons are the same. So if all the carbons are the same, then this must be some sort of rearrangement. And given that it's a rearrangement, one of the things to note is that these guys form an acetal, and that is the acetal carbon. The acetal carbons with acid and water can open and close. And if it were to open and close, it can go to a linear molecule and it can close in a different orientation if there happens to be two alcohols present in the molecule. This is the exact same problem that we did right here. It's just not a bicyclic ring system. It's a monocyclic ring system. But it's the exact same thing that we've got to deal with. And so we've got to map it out the same way. So take a second and try and map it out and see if you can find the bond that is rotating. I'm going to erase my colors. And I'll map it out in a second too. I'm going to give you a shot to map it out first. See if you can find the bond that it's rotating on. Numbering can also be super helpful here. So if we could take and we could number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and just number out those carbons and find those carbons over here. It looks like they should be 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, but it doesn't make sense that a methyl would move from 4 over to the other side. That's just not logical. So that means that my numbering must be wrong. So it can't be 4 and 5 that way. It must be 4 and 5 that way. Once I realize that my numbering is wrong, that helps me to then figure out what's actually going on in the molecule. So now I can take and I can say, oh, okay, maybe start with this oxygen and take that arm, and that oxygen must be there. That means that this arm and that oxygen must be that guy. And then the rest of this is the system that's unchanging. So what bond is it pivoting on? The 3, yeah, 2, 3 specifically. The third carbon is the carbon that is the carbon that's going to rotate, but it's rotating on the 2, 3 sigma bond. It is this bond here that's the pivot point, that's the rotation point. And so what we need to do is we need to break that bond there. So now we have all of the things that we need to do. So I'm going to go through and I'm going to protonate this and open it. But I need you to tell me which oxygen to protonate. So which oxygen do I want to protonate? You can tell me by color. Do I want to protonate red, green, blue? What do I want to protonate first in order to make this mechanism work? Absolutely. Adriana, that's perfect. Green is absolutely right. So let's go ahead and draw this. We'll redraw it. We'll start the mechanism. We'll protonate on green first. And the reason that we're protonating green first is because we want to create that good leaving group. That good leaving group, if we want to break the bond between the anomeric or the acetal carbon, number one, and the green oxygen, then I need to make the green oxygen my leaving group in order to break that. So once it's protonated, now it can become a good leaving group. And I can do the assisted leaving step to give it the boot. Once the bond is broken, the molecule is now linear and can freely rotate. And so now we get that rotation about the 2-3 bond. So I'll actually draw the rotation in because I find that really helpful to change the orientation before I start to try to do anything else. So there's the rotation. And then once it's rotated, then I can push in and make the new bond. And then the last step is deprotonation of the resulting cation there. Oops. And that's it. So a couple of things that we're seeing is that color can be really useful. Numbering, always a critical skill, helps you to see where things are going. Keeping track of that ketal acetal mechanism and looking for the common intermediates. When you have an acidic mechanism, always look for protonation first. If there are multiple sites of protonation, explore the different sites and look for some sort of common intermediate that looks familiar to you for the mechanism. And that common intermediate is usually looking for something like this guy that came from the assisted leaving step. And so it looks like a protonated carbonyl is the main intermediate that we see with these guys all the time. So was that one a little bit faster to see as we got into it, once having done the one above? I mean, I know that this one's three-dimensional and this one's flatter, but same skill set. That's why I'm trying to mix it up a bit. And I think that was the last one that I went through with them this morning. How about questions? Anything come up? No, seems like you guys are pretty good. All right, I think that's all I got for today. That was some good practice though in going through these enol, I will keep wanting to say enol, acetal and ketal mechanisms. There's a lot of good skills in there. And looking at the problems in the book, there's still a lot more good problems in the book. So there's lots of good practice in there to go through and work on these problems. And there's a lot more that have to do with the types of reactions that we were doing today, looking at the enamine and the imine mechanisms. Those are also in there. And there's a couple of them that are in there for Wittig as well. So the Wittig ones are actually really good too. So I think you've got lots of good practice to go through and work on those problems. And I would just hit the end of chapter problems and pick a few of those and work on those. And it wouldn't hurt to redo some of these if you run into these within that chapter as well, and sit down and reproduce them in your own hand and in your own time, just to solidify that skill set of going through them. Because these are very similar to the types of things that I would throw onto the exam. Okay. All right, it's a deal. I think I'm gonna take a break. And I'll see you guys either tomorrow for office hours, or I'll see you on Thursday.
Thank you, Jason.
You're welcome, BB. All right, take care, you guys.
Hey, Jason.
Yeah.
I have a quick question. I just wanted to know what the schedule for the next week or so is going to look like.